show, hour number three on this Thursday night. This is going to be fun. Always fascinating to look at ancient history, which really isn't so ancient after all in some ways. We're going to find out a lot this hour as we explore the Pyramid Code. It's a made-for-television documentary. I'm sure some of you have seen it. 5 episodes that explore the pyramid fields and ancient temples in Egypt, as well as ancient megalithic sites around the world, looking for clues to matriarchal consciousness, ancient knowledge, and sophisticated technology in a golden age. It's an extraordinary series and has been seen by people all around the world. It has aired on national television in 34 countries and has been translated into several different languages. The series was nominated for the Best Documentary of 2010 by the documentary channel, and The Pyramid Code rose to number 2 on the Amazon.com bestsellers list in its category. This is really quite a story. The series is based on the extensive, well, to put it mildly, extensive research done in 25 trips to Egypt and to 51 other countries around the world by Dr. Carmen Bolter, formerly from the Graduate Division of Educational Research at the University of Calgary in Canada. Welcome to the program, Dr. Bolter. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Well, it's my pleasure. This is a fascinating area of research and study, and I've been looking into it from my armchair perspective for many, many years with people that you're friends with and you know, Stephen Mailer, Chris Dunn, and many others. This is a story that really goes far, far back in the history of this planet. And there are some sample questions, which I rarely relate to. And when I do an interview, I just go into it and talk. But this is one I like to ask. And Michael Cremo was on this program nearly 20 years ago now. And one of the things we learned from Michael was through his research that we are not the first and only civilization, and I'm talking about going back the last 5,000-6,000 years, ever to live on this planet. The evidence is overwhelming. We are not the biggest and the best. In short, what kind of an answer would you give to that general statement?
Well, there's all kinds of evidence that's been buried, and the Bible wants us to think we're 6,000 years old, and we're taught that in school. And
yeah.
So there really has been an academic imperative to keep us thinking that way. And I know for a fact, with doing archaeological work, that things that are out of place get buried again. Or get
literally get buried in many cases.
Or cemented over, and there's plenty of that in Egypt
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
And so there's been many civilizations, and what's coming to light now is even a hardcore facts about Atlantis 50,000 years ago. And so it was a worldwide seafaring culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you dig around enough, you find the evidence, and then the new pieces start to fit together in a new story.
It's a very exciting story, too. Just last week, we had the evidence, photography, I guess, and other designs and diagrams showing that off the coast of Argentina or Brazil, off Brazil, I think, they found another remnant of an underwater, now underwater, probably wasn't, of course, at one time, civilization of some kind. Some very interesting. Well, I guess they were a grid pattern of lines, pretty much, that was suggestive of something that was not natural.
Yep. And you know, they're popping up all over the place. There was another one of buildings underwater by the coast of Cuba.
Oh, yeah, that's a big story. I hope we hear more about that. I hope they don't thunk the lid down on it, because that was fascinating. That was very deep in the water, as I recall, several thousand feet down.
They can put the lid on things, like all the research with the Bosnian pyramids. The mainstream media has been told to leave it alone, it's a hoax, forget it.
Right,
and
oh yeah.
The amount of research coming out from Dr. Samir Osmanovic is just astounding.
Yeah, I had him on the program. It is an amazing story. Everywhere you look around the planet is an abundance of evidence that we have been here as a so-called intelligent species before. My theory is, Did you ever read the book A Canticle for Leibowitz?
I have not.
All right, that's a classic, and it suggests that over the eons, we, as a bipedal hominoid species, has arisen from the wreckage of the last try and climbed up the ladder again, only to fall on our faces each and every time. Same thing, greed, power, destructive force, science gone crazy, lunatics running research and development that pushed the whole planet into a depression and ruined basically the whole situation for everybody.
That's correct. It's happened over and over again, you're right.
So it is a repeating cycle in your view. Well, good. Well, we're on the same page there. Let me go back to some of the basics about the Giza Plateau. How old are these monuments? And I don't want to call them tombs because I don't believe that they are in all cases, perhaps some. There are other things going on Giza. What is your general overview of that situation? How old is the Sphinx, for example? Now, the rain and the weathering suggests it's, what, 25 to 35,000 years old, according to some estimates? It's old.
39,000. Now, a straight-sided pyramid has never been a tomb. The flat-topped ones with jagged sides are called mastabas, and they were tombs.
So may I say one other thing, please, Dr. Bolter? Those lesser pyramids, to me, were imitative of the great pyramids that perhaps were around long before them. Is that a fair statement?
That's right. The little ones are really poorly constructed and much, much smaller.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's a unified ground plan at the Giza Plateau, which I think existed even before the pyramids were put there. I think something happened, and then they used those markers because all of the pyramids in the Band of Peace, which is six sites north and south of the Giza Plateau, correspond to star systems. And it happens that Giza corresponds to Orion, and we got that from Robert Bovall.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an awful lot going on there. But here's just a little clue. There was a lot of high cosmology and great high-level wisdom that was going on. And when the dynastic period started in 3113 B.C., it was already patriarchal in Egypt, and it was deteriorating. So the scribes were finding material, but they were having trouble translating it because they didn't understand. So there were a number of rituals about consciousness raising that went on inside the Great Pyramid, inside the sarcophagus. If you got in the right angle,
mm-hmm.
the pineal gland would be aligned with all of the energy vortices that were connected to the shape and the geometry of the pyramid. So when the person would leave their body to have an out-of-body experience to go and get star knowledge and that sort of thing, they looked dead. They were motionless. And so they started to refer to them as the deceased. So then they had to be tombs, and then it went on from there. But the pyramids were never intended to be tombs, and they never were tombs. They've never found a mummy in any pyramid ever, and that doesn't detract them. But that's one of the clues as to how they started getting onto this thing, and then they started with other practices and the mummification and all that came later.
Very interesting. So these early Egyptians, as we call them, were basically trying to process information and knowledge left behind or left to them from an earlier intelligence.
Well, and what we're calling this now is the third-party hypothesis. And what it's doing is it's tying together why the Mayans, the ancient Indians,
mm-hmm.
Sumerians, and it goes on around the world, why these civilizations all had similar stories about the gods and those that came fire from above and all
that. Yeah, they all had pyramids, too.
And they all had pyramids. So the idea here is that they had similar ancestors or similar wisdom keepers.
Something
that
was
came
there.
And informed each
mm-hmm.
of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the Mayans talked to the Indians, talked to Sumerians, but they were all talking to a third party that was similar. And I think that's helpful to understand it a little more.
Well, it's a very interesting hypothesis. Is that in the Pyramid Code, by the way?
That part is not, but I'm working on a new documentary series now called The New Atlantis. And essentially what that's going to be is two episodes before the Pyramid Code and two after, bringing us right to present day, taking us all the way back to the Atlanteans and what's known about them.
Ah, a prequel and a sequel.
That's right.
Very good. All right. Now, the idea that we have cone heads in South America is well known. There are similar skull shapes depicted at least in the artistry, in the murals, and in the other glyphs on Giza. You think the same thing applies? Same head shape? There's no accident there.
No, and in South America, what you find is some are bound, some are natural, and some are artificial.
Yeah, there was certainly an imitative process there by some of the peoples to try to emulate whoever really had these heads naturally.
Okay, now we find most of these related to the Amarna period and Nefertiti and Akhenaten, and their daughters and King Tut. And it's not just stylistic, because we can see their actual skulls have a different shape.
Uh-huh.
What it allows for is an enlarged pineal gland. And most of us have got our pineal glands calcified from fluoridation. But what it was the big connector with spirit. They have larger brain capacity as well.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the pineal gland. Most people pronounce it pineal gland. I always said pineal gland as well. In a minute, and what that gland is, what it does, and why it's maybe being calcified with intent, with fluoridation, among other reasons. This is a very interesting subject. All right, hold on. We'll come right back. And The Pyramid Code, a remarkable documentary, and you heard there is a prequel and a sequel coming. That's very interesting. Back in just a minute with Dr. Carmen Bolter. It's really amazing how little we know about our own bodies. Most people don't understand that the entire endocrine gland system is inextricably linked to one another. If one is off or out of kilter or under or overperforming, the rest of them respond, and it can put a tremendous stress on the whole system. The pineal gland is one that is understood by very few. They might even have heard of it, but that's about it. What about this gland, and is there a definite link in the introduction of fluoride with the efforts by the controllers, Dr. Bolter, to keep everybody down on the farm?
Well, what's interesting is that the pineal gland is related to multidimensional perception.
How do we know this?
Well, I think that we get our clues from the ancient Egyptians and what they were doing and how they were having these out-of-body experiences, and what they understood about cosmology.
Do some of the glyphs depict OBEs and mental astral journeys and so forth?
Absolutely, and there's a lot now. The ceiling of the first hypostyle hall of the Temple of Dendera has been cleaned in the last few years,
mm-hmm.
and it is a cosmic map of all time, and it's showing all of this. But the studies, like they call it the Egyptian Book of the Dead, but it's really the Book of Coming Forth into Day. I've been studying this for decades.
Well, Dendera is the one that allegedly has the glyph that shows the submarine and the helicopter and all that, correct?
No, that's in the same neck of the woods. That's at Abydos.
Okay.
That's the Temple of Seti the First.
Got
but
it.
But they're
okay.
Related, and they're much older temples, and they're farther away from the Nile, which is how we know that they're older. Mm-hmm. The Nile has migrated, because they most assuredly would have been close to the Nile.
Older like 5,000 years, thousands of years, hundreds of years? We don't know. The river can move.
15,000,
okay.
20,000, long, right. long behind.
Okay.
Like the Osirian, you see, there's a temple underneath the Temple of Dendera, and there's one place where you can see the pillars from that are down below.
Oh, that goes way back. Yeah, okay.
Yes, way back. And it's hard to say. I mean, I don't want to, be nailed to a date.
And these folks don't necessarily look anything like modern-day Egyptians or Arabs or anything else. We don't know what they look like.
Well, I think this descended skull was part of it, and I think that it started to percolate back during the time of Nefertiti and Akhenaten. And the Osirian is outside, and the new temple's on top, but over to the sides. So you actually can go way, way down, and you can see the depth of it and how it's connected to the water table. And so there are all kinds of passageways and passages in the Egyptian Book of the Dead that's talking, and that's, of course, the wrong title for it, but that's what it's referred to as now.
Right,
but
right.
Talking about these OBEs and how they would practice consciously leaving to go through to the other side, so that because they didn't have a word for death, they processed that when they left this incarnation, their ba, which is the soul that continues even though you drop this body,
right,
would be able to make these journeys consciously. And that it's easy to leave if anybody's had an OBE. The trick is to return and to remember what you saw. So they always would go into, once they were back in their bodies, they would go into 72 hours of incubation, pull the star knowledge back and to be able to ground it. And it was only one person at a time that did these journeys, and then there were attendants to make sure that they were okay, but also to understand it from a perspective when you're not doing the journey.
That's
so
a very, very interesting, exacting description of a very interesting practice. Now, this is all unquestionably in the so-called Book of the Dead. All right.
But the turn of phrase. So if you make a mistake with the prepositions or with the verb tenses or whatever, mm-hmm. and the scribes are copying each other's mistakes down over the millennia,
mm-hmm.
by the end of it, it's like a game of telephone. You don't know what the first message was.
Some would say, all right, we go back 15, 20,000 years in research with Dr. Bolter. Why would 20,000 years ago people be writing things on papyrus or some other kind of perishable commodity? How do we know?
Papyrus is pretty durable, and it came along later again, I think, in the early dynastic period.
Sure.
But the frescoes are the secrets. Now, there were periods of resurgence of memory, and I think during the time of Hatshepsut, Queen Hatshepsut,
mm-hmm.
and then later with Nefertiti, Akhenaten, and Tut, that they were remembering things from another time and pulling it back in. And so I think it's very important to understand that.
Were they OBEing it, or were these just things that were filtering back to them in conscious states? What do we know?
Never know. I tend to think the ones with the distended skulls were starseeds, and they actually had a different makeup altogether. And then mm-hmm. Akhenaten's gotten a bad rap in pretty much every book that's ever been written about him. They say he was crazy, and they say he was deformed, and he was diseased, and even when they did the DNA research on Tut, they totally loved that, and they said he had a club foot and a hair lip, and he died of malaria, and it's all a medical model that they're just kind of trying to shove back at us that wasn't really, that's just us.
Intentionally or just incompetence?
Yeah. No, I watched that for 15 years. I was watching about the DNA research, and they kept the Japanese team, and then Scott Woodward,
mm-hmm.
and they went Brigham Young University, and then, they're just about to drill to get the DNA out of the teeth, and stop, security. And then they bought a DNA lab and put it in the basement of the National Museum, and I knew that Zahi Waas was going to try to make it sound like Tut was Akhenaten. I don't know why that agenda, but they wanted Tut to be Akhenaten's son, and he's not. No way. He was part of the royal family. Yes, he lived there. Yes, he's related, but not directly that way. And I listened to him in Arabic say it. I knew he was going to do it, and he did. So I'm not sure what that agenda is, but I was very, very tuned into that story.
Hawass was a player. He kind of got his comeuppance, I guess, toward the end there, but he was involved, as best we can figure, and I say we, the people I know, in looting incalculable amounts of artifacts, treasures, knowledge, wisdom.
Absolutely.
Just horrible pillaging.
And in those 3 weeks in between the Mubarak, from the beginning of the revolution and Mubarak going down, that was 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And they even staged something in the museum and put it on CNN with the espionage and the guys in the black suits being lowered by ropes and blamed the Egyptian people. And then Zahi was stationed in America when all the other cabinet ministers ended up under house arrest, and he was selling the stuff on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
They were taking whole containers, saying they were artifacts, saying they were fake from Kal Al-Khalili Market, and everything was real.
Wow. Well,
you should see the museum now. First time I was in there was in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And if you spent 1 minute at each exhibit, you would have been in there 9 months. And then in the last 2 years, half the stuff was gone, and even more than that, last time I was there in December, they're closing whole rooms. They're talking about a new museum that they're building near the plateau, and they haven't even dug in the ground yet.
Where are these things going?
Oh, all over the world. There's been evidence of things popping up in Japan.
They're just parsing them out, just selling them off.
They're selling them. They're selling them to private collectors.
Well, all right. Very interesting, to put it mildly. Be back in just a couple as we continue our conversation with Dr. Bolter about the Giza Plateau and the Pyramid Code and much more in just a few. Thank you. Okay. We can all view the Pyramid Code, all five parts of it, on YouTube. It's all there. And I urge all of you, maybe this weekend, to sit down and enjoy it. It's a remarkable journey, a trip through the past, and there is so much there. Are you amazed at how easily the masses have been shut down? And let me go back to my issue about fluoride. That wasn't put in the water accidentally, of course. And one wonders if they did know its effect on the pineal gland in the beginning.
Well, I think they did. They started using it in the concentration camps in Nazi Germany.
Well, the carryover to the masses certainly wasn't because of the... let's put it this way. They had a perfect test laboratory there, yeah.
Well, they did. And I don't know if it's that quickly. I mean, when you think about Freud's nephew, Bernays, who...
Edward L. Bernays. He was the master, yeah.
Yeah, and the whole public relations and all of that. And
yeah, mass
slowly training people to become consumers and putting us in this place of distraction where we're supposed to shop and want and brands and all of that instead of consciousness. So consciousness isn't the highest value in our culture. Profit is. And that has to change. I mean, we're doing ourselves in with that.
All true. Now, let's go back to the idea that we are not the first. What is your view of the origin of the people before? I suspect it's off planet. There's no reason to think that that isn't a possibility. We've been around as a planet here for 4.5 billion years. We found, as you know, and many of you listening may know, they found in rocks, 2 billion years old? I've forgotten how old the rocks were in South Africa. Those tiny little round metallic spheres with perfect carvings in like an equator, Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn, thousands and thousands of them inside billion-year-old rock formations. So there's evidence all over the place that this planet has been at least visited, if not inhabited, mined, worked, colonized by other intelligences, not necessarily humans.
All of the above, but I think that the disaster that happened when an asteroid hit the three tectonic plates around the Azores that led to the sinking of Atlantis is when we lost a lot of it, because if anything like that happened now, we'd be driven back into the Stone Age too. You know, all of our electrical appliances wouldn't work and all of that. So I really think that there was a starting over when that happened. But
the record shows, excuse me, that, and you know this already, but for our listeners, something very big happened 11 to 12,000 years ago on this planet.
It's even more precise than that. Now, in the New Atlantis, I've just finished writing the script, and there's the ceiling. What's usually talked about is the Dendera Zodiac, the round zodiac on the ceiling that's now at the Louvre, has a different name, and it's the Calendar of Catastrophe. And we go through in detail how the Earth was impacted, and on the linear ceiling of the Temple of Dendera, the linear zodiac is actually saying pre-flood, post-flood, and what happened to the zodiac, because the whole processional cycle shifted. The Earth was knocked off its axis. The days of the year changed. There used to be 360 days in a year, and then it became 365. And so this was kind of the reorganization and the regrouping and figuring out what to do next. And it was leaving the record of exactly what happened, exactly when it happened.
And so who was responsible for recording those events in that calendar?
Well, now everything I'm saying comes from records. Okay,
yes.
Not somebody fabricating it or channeling it.
Got it.
And so it seems that there was a premonition that this was going to happen, and they said when the heart of the the head of the crab ends up at the heart of the lion, which means that somehow Cancer and Leo collided and shifted positions. Well, the astrological signs don't move. They move in relationship to each other, but something happened there. And so it seems that in Atlantis they had evacuation committees. They had fleets of boats that went around the world that started building these pyramid sites in anticipation of recolonizing there when the catastrophe happened.
Pyramid sites have been for? They're going, they're out there building them. What were they used for?
Okay, now, there's the source of pyramid energy is a lot of it's quartz, and there's a double helix on quartz, and it's the shape of the pyramids, it's the weight of the pyramids. There's a lot going on in terms of how they were built. But they were meant to connect to the earthly spheres and the galactic and, so the solar system, the galaxy, the universe. So all of these, based on the golden mean ratio, are related. So the shape of the human body and the way the solar system works and everything's related, and they knew that. So it somehow magnifies that energy and allows a human being to connect with the cosmic spheres, which would allow them to gain in intelligence and multidimensional ability. And this was what they were all about. Mm. And so there's many, many uses to the pyramids in terms of helping seeds grow and even stabilizing the Earth, because the sheer weight of the pyramid on the telluric grid was actually helping stabilize the Earth from earthquakes. So, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, it's not something I can say in 5 minutes, but everything relates to this.
Okay, so far beyond just symbolic, they were actually physical issues.
Tools.
That impacted the Earth. All right.
And there's all kinds of things now that we can measure. We've got the gaseous discharge visualization, electrophotonic imaging that came out of Russia and Dr. Konstantin Korkov. We can measure fields. We can measure how energetic fields are increased in the pyramid and how it affects the consciousness of a person. So I've run two major studies in Egypt and also in other places, looking at measuring somebody before, inside the Great Pyramid, immediately after they've been in the sarcophagus for 2 minutes, and then running a quantitative analysis because the groups were large enough, and I just replicated the study.
So they just got in there and laid down for 2 minutes, and then you got out.
Yep.
If that is in fact a sarcophagus, but it's not one for the dead, it was something else.
Well, what it is the positioning of it, and some people get it backwards, which makes me smile, but the positioning of it gives, if you look at the entire structure of the pyramid, it focuses all the energy right into the center of your head, and that's what gives the energy. Now, my hypothesis was that there was something about spending a lot of time in the Great Pyramid that actually facilitated becoming more psychic. And so the ancient initiates were into the transmutation of the atom. So telepathy was one thing, but then levitation, bilocation, manifestation, these other abilities came along with it. And this was part of the technology that they used in order to facilitate that.
Okay.
And it happened faster.
So something was obviously designed, and what you're suggesting is to focus something on the brain of the person lying in the sarcophagus.
Yes, and the entire glandular system.
Okay.
And what my research has shown is that it causes an entrainment of the chakras, which is actually what causes extrasensory perception.
Interesting. Well, what if they got in the sarcophagus upside down? In other words, their feet were where their
this wouldn't
head
work
ought to
well.
Be. It wouldn't work as well, but it would still work.
Well, I don't...
Is there
to do a lot more research to conclude that.
Yeah.
But
is there some indication there of which end is up, so to speak, in the sarcophagus itself?
No, and that's why I know that people who have the intuitive knowledge of that are high-level initiates that reincarnated.
Uh-huh.
Because they wouldn't dare going backwards.
Well, interesting. Okay. All right, just a second. We'll pause and continue. You can find out all about this, again, not the new film, but the existing one, The Pyramid Code. And the website is real simple, pyramidcode.com. Back in a minute. Okay, back with Dr. Carmen Bolter, The Pyramid Code, pyramidcode.com. There is so much more going on this planet than most people will ever understand. How helpful was the smallish book, the accumulation of all the readings by Edgar Cayce that dealt with Atlantis, to your research and your vision about this whole thing?
I think very helpful, just because he was mentioning it, but apparently there's more books written about Atlantis and the pyramids than other subjects, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that it appeals to the place in us that really is seeking an answer for who we are and what we're doing here. And it's just such a tragedy because it's such a natural curiosity, the fact that we're getting steered in the other direction.
Of course, it's our birthright. We really have a right to know. They don't think so, the controllers. They don't want us to know. They want to keep us on a short leash and keep us accountable right now to their idiocy. And that's their game. Okay, what else remains to be found? Now, Cayce said that, of course, under the left or right front paw of the Sphinx was an entry to an underground room, hall of records, so to speak. It's also said to be under one of the pyramids. But if it is there, no question it has been looted long ago. That's my feeling. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but
Well, one of the things that strikes me, and this is something that's very near and dear to my heart, is that when they say under, I say beneath and in front. So that's a turn of phrase again, which I mentioned before. And there is a whole network of passageways under there. And I spent 5 years in and out of those passageways.
Under the plateau or under the actual monuments area? Well, the whole plateau is crisscrossed with underground passages. We know
but
that.
But there are several connected to the body of the Sphinx. And there was actually a temple of Isis to the on the left flank, almost at the arm level of the Sphinx. And so that's like, again, beneath and beside. And then there's the Valley Temple right in front of it, which is one of the best-kept secrets there is, because there are passageways that go from that temple all the way to the initiation chambers inside the second pyramid.
And, oh, really? How did you get into these?
Never mind. No people.
Okay, gotcha. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
I was pretty determined and pretty curious, and I spent a lot of time going on the plateau at night before the big wall was up.
What were the passages? What are the passages like when you're down inside them? Are they smooth-walled? Are they obviously high-tech-ish, or are they chiseled out by hand? What did it look like?
All of the above. Now, so this is covered quite widely in the Pyramid Code, but some of it are honeycomb-shaped man-made passageways that have granite and transmission stones and that sort of thing with the crystal. Others are natural, like a limestone aquifer. Some are very tall, some are very short. Most of them are blocked, so you don't go very far. And, you know, I've come...
Blocked by what, Carmen?
Blocked by other rocks, blocked by things dropped in from above. Big, big stones in there. It's been thousands of years that they've been messing with them. Now, I've got photographs of inside the Sphinx, and I spent a lot of time inside the body of the Sphinx by myself. And it's completely been changed. They went in there, and they've completely modernized it, if you will.
All right, inside, hold on. Inside the body of the Sphinx, one doesn't commonly know that the Sphinx is hollow and accessible and that there is a chamber in there.
There's three.
There's
one that you can see. I've flown over in a helicopter, and you can see that there's another passageway that's connected to the back of the neck, and I have not gone up there. But it was like wormhole passageways in there. And every time I spent any amount of time in the Sphinx by myself, I would not sleep for 72 hours, which is concurrent with what I was saying before about the out-of-body experience and then having to digest it. But I'd download all these light codes. And so it's a world in there. But
so
there
you crawled in there with a flashlight or whatever and came out 72 hours later.
No. I would go in there and have the experience, an hour or whatever.
Okay.
And then I would come out and just be, I wouldn't sleep for 72 hours. And I was processing. And it happened every single time. And I'm telling you, I did it over and over again. There's an inner chamber of the heart of the Sphinx. And there's other places down but mostly there was a whole network of temples, of passageways that led to this one temple.
Which is gone.
Well, cemented. They cemented over the top of it.
Who's they?
The Department of Antiquities, Zahi.
Really?
I watched them do it. I was living over there. I watched them do it. And now it's percolating back up. The water table's there because the river used to run right at the foot of the Sphinx temple.
Sphinx, yeah.
There's a temple in front of it, and then the water would be... And it's coming back up, so that's evidence that the river used to be there.
So they ran trucks out there and just cemented over the top of this thing.
They did.
Wow.
And people say, oh, they're excavating, well, you're going to have to close the east entrance, to the plateau, and then run jackhammers on it. You would know if they were excavating. Now, the other thing is that we think if there's records, they're English books, or there's some kind of big thing that's going to, you know, but they're talking to us in symbols. And I think that the high-level initiates left clues for us, if we were waking up, that we could trigger some of this stuff and understand it. So the imprint of the location, and even in the Bosnian pyramids, underneath there's a whole network of passageways that are high and low, rough and smooth. And what it does is it forces the air to circulate in a certain way so that the air is fresh down there, which is completely brilliant.
I remember seeing that.
The parallel structures between the Bosnian pyramids and the Great Pyramid are incredible.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm not saying really like really, but really. Okay. This is interesting. Now, when Dr. Sam was on the program, we talked about this, and I've seen YouTube videos of it. The air moving right through it, very interesting. Whoever designed that was pretty darn smart, to put it mildly. The whole thing. It's huge.
You know, he got carbon-14 dating. He found some natural material between the third and fourth course of the poured stones and took it to a lab. And
I didn't know the results were out.
You know what the date is?
Hmm.
24,600 years ago, plus or minus 1,200, because the further back you go with carbon-14, the less accurate it is,
yes.
Which is a full precessional cycle.
Well, that's remarkable.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the whole planet's full of these relics, if that's what they are. The Bosnia Pyramid is enormous. Is that not bigger than the Great Pyramid of Giza?
Well, I'm going there in September. I'll look with my own eyes. But when I first saw the Great Pyramid in Egypt, I thought, well, it's the wrong size. This must be the small one.
Mm-hmm.
And the person I was with said, what do you mean? It's the Great Pyramid. But the Great Pyramid, the whole plateau was used as a quarry, and people took the casing stones and everything. So it's a lot smaller now than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll assess that when I see it. Could be that it's bigger.
I don't remember, but it seems to me it's enormous. In any case, what I've said for years is that if the Egyptian government was smart, they try to restore one side of the casing stones to the Great Pyramid. New ones, fine. Restore it so people could see what it looked like once. Some of the casing stones are remaining at the bottom, I guess, of one side. But
that's right.
It must have been an astounding thing to look at before it was stripped of all that limestone.
Absolutely. But you know what? I don't think we have the technology to do that now or in Egypt that they could do it. But did you know that they've built a brand new pyramid in Russia?
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to now I've forgotten the name. There are one or two scientists in Russia who are really working hard on the pyramid issue. And I had one of them on the program, John
Valerie
DeSalvo.
Kubera?
Well, John DeSalvo brought him on, and we talked to him. And the idea that things happen in the pyramid is pretty well recognized. What happens above the pyramid is not talked about very often, but we did do that. And above the pyramid, I've forgotten the height, you know, half a mile, something like that. Very measurable electromagnetic things were happening directly above
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And the further away you got from the beam, the stronger the field became. And now we have the measurement instruments to do this. And so one of the things is like Zahi was Dr. No, and Dr. Sam is Dr. Yes.
Yep.
Right? And
yep.
Valerie Uvarov has been, you know, they're building 9 pyramids at one site. And it's quite an interesting project. And I'm going to go and film it this summer as part of this documentary. So there was all kinds of spontaneous healings in the construction workers. When they were, the pyramid wasn't even finished, and this guy had really serious asthma.
I remember the stories. Yeah.
You do? And then all of a sudden he had a spontaneous healing and never had anything happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of stuff. But anyway, they used poured stone. They made crushed quartz polymer and put the casing stones on. Well, and it really what it is that it's almost like icing that then kind of melts into place and hardens. And then they've got a real crystal on the top, and a 14-foot crystal inside. I mean, it just goes on and on. The technology is incredible, and I understand more now.
What was on top of the Great Pyramid?
Well,
the flat spot up there. What do you think?
Well, first of all, it's not flat up there now, but I think they used to have this a certain kind of metal that isn't even from here. That's a combination of different metals. But it was the strength that there was all kinds of nefarious things that were happening over millennia as well, where they were afraid that it was going to get overcharged or that it would fall into the hands of the wrong people. So the capstone was actually removed and went into the etheric. But now what's up there is just a wooden pole from the end of World War II when they put up 3 countries' flags, and they just left the wooden pole up there. If the capstone was removed,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure there used to be one at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just have about a minute left, Carmen. What do you want to say in summary that we missed? There's so much to talk about, of course. This is a huge subject. It's fascinating. What would you want to say in closing here?
Well, I'll be speaking at the Hidden Mysteries Conference in September with Dr. Sam, and there's quite a lineup of speakers. And I think this is going to be a real opportunity, you know, to really work with scientists and compare some of these notes. And so there's a little tour before it, and then I'm going to be doing an Egypt trip after that, right away after from the 8th to the 22nd of December. September. And so I think that we need to just keep on listening and doing the science and taking readings whenever we can and comparing notes. And that's one of the things. This is a beautiful openness between the scientists in Bosnia and in Russia.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you. This has been very interesting, and your work, obviously, must keep you awake nights with excitement. I mean, it's you're on to something obviously enormous.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet.
A pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Dr. Carmen Bolter and PyramidCode.com. There is so much going on this planet that they don't want us to know about it. It really is infuriating if you think about it. But thanks to people like that and others, and you know very well from this program, we're slowly but surely putting together a picture of something that was quite extraordinary quite a long time ago. All right, that's our program tonight. Have a good night's sleep. Have a great day tomorrow, and we'll talk soon.